Crisco's Radio Newspaper with Bernardine Flynn. Brought to you by Crisco, the pure all-vegetable shortening. It's digestible. And now, Bernardine Flynn.
Thank you, Durward, and hello, friends. Before Durward Kirby brings us today's world news, let me tell you about the new fur piece Mrs. Otto Reising almost had. The other day, when she went into the bedroom of her home in Gary, Indiana, she saw what appeared to be a beautiful fur on her bed. My, what a surprise that was. She rushed out to her husband in the living room to thank him. "You got me a new fur piece," she said excitedly. "It's lovely." Her husband looked up, but didn't have a chance to say anything before he and the children were being herded into the bedroom to see the new fur. Well, that was a surprise, too, because just as they entered the door, they saw the fur come to life, yawn, amble over the bed and through the window, and climb up a tree. "That," said Mr. Reising, "is a raccoon." "Well," said his wife, "that's the kind of fur I want. Maybe you'd better get a gun and go hunting." Now, Durward, what's the latest world news?
First of all, Byrne, Naval Secretary Knox has issued some new figures on our Navy. He says we're getting nearly 12 new seagoing ships every day, and this does not include the many small auxiliary vessels that are being built. To man our rapidly expanding fleet, Mr. Knox says the Navy will need another 500,000 men before the end of this year. Only one of the Navy's many jobs is to keep a steady flow of supplies going across the Atlantic to the men preparing to invade Western Europe. And the Allies do not intend to have that invasion operation endangered by German and Japanese officials in the nearby neutral country of Aire. Prime Minister Churchill says that we will isolate Aire completely from the outer world in order to prevent invasion secrets leaking out to the Axis. A couple of other diplomatic items in the news concern Russia. Marshal Stalin has recognized the Italian government of Marshal Badoglio and agreed to exchange ambassadors, something the United States and Britain have not done as yet. At the same time, Mr. Stalin has told Finland that it has a few days more to accept Russian peace terms or accept the consequences. But even bigger news is that being reported from Russia's war fronts. Three strong Soviet armies are battling their way through crumbling German defenses along a 500-mile front today. And the Germans are hastily seeking to avert a major calamity to their forces, remaining in the path of the Russian troops pushing down to the Black Sea. A Turkish dispatch says every available ship in Romania's Black Sea ports is being rushed to Odessa. Offhand, this seems to foreshadow a complete collapse of the Germans' broken southern flank in Russia. The roads running back from the front, both toward Odessa and Nikolaev, another Black Sea port, are reported jammed with scurrying German tanks, trucks, buses, motorcycles, and tired infantrymen. And while the Russians are roaring toward a battle climax, the Italian fighting is still localized in nature. Although the weather has improved, most sectors are bogged down in deep mud, a result of weeks of rain and snow. The Germans say that our four-engine bombers raided Rome this morning, but so far there has been nothing on this from our side. The air war against Western Europe was kept rolling during the night when hundreds of RAF heavy bombers made a thunderbolt attack on railway targets about 100 miles southwest of Paris. And on the other side of the world, there have been new American air raids against Jap targets in the Central Pacific and against Rabaul and Wewak down in the southwest corner. In the Solomons, American ground troops have repulsed a very heavy Japanese attack against our beachhead positions on Bougainville, and other United States soldiers have seized two more islands in the Admiralty Group. An American bomber pilot who spent 14 months flying with the Air Force in the Pacific has now been transferred to England. His name, it's a very familiar one, is Jimmy Doolittle, but he's a captain, not a major general like his dad. And Junior says he prefers medium bombers for his work, even though his dad happens to be commander of the American heavy bomber force in England. Here at home, Price Administrator Chester Bowles has ordered the A gasoline ration in all states west of the Allegheny Mountains cut from 3 to 2 gallons a week. The order is effective March 22nd. He also reduced the permissible B mileage in 5 Pacific states by 60 miles a month. And that's the top of today's world news. Bernardine, you look very pleased about something. What is it?
Well, I feel good today. Things started out right to begin with. Just before I left the house this morning, the phone rang. It was a young bride down the street who had been in tears a day or so ago because she just couldn't turn out a decent pie. So I had told her about Crisco and Crisco's pastry method. She'd tried it, and you should have heard her this morning.
Well, that's the swell part about Crisco's pastry method. Even beginners can turn out pie crust that's tender and flaky. And every time, too.
Well, even the best of pie makers used to have bad luck occasionally. But not anymore. Why, friends, do you know that with pure all-vegetable Crisco and the Crisco pastry method, every single time you make a pie, you can count on a pie crust that's tender and flaky. Last night, for instance, I made a prune pie. It's delicious, served with spoonfuls of whipped cream cheese. Every last speck of that pie was eaten. The crust was so golden brown and tender and flaky, it melted in your mouth. You should have seen the children. I was certainly glad I didn't have to worry about upset digestions. You don't with Crisco pie crust.
Crisco pie crusts have everything, all right. Just try them and see, ladies. The directions for the pastry method are right on the Crisco label. And I'll bet my bottom dollar that you never tasted better pie crust in all your life.
Derwood's right. And remember, with Crisco's pastry method, you can count on pie crust like that every single time.
Well, Byrne, what's next?
Oh, first of all, Derwood, do you remember the story about the Flying Fortress, Hell's Angels?
Yes, why?
And do you also remember the story about 11-year-old Carl Bueller, Jr. of Verona, New Jersey?
Carl, let me see. Oh, yeah, that's the young fellow who got the ride in the Jeep for selling so many war bonds.
You're right again.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, let me tell you the newest chapter in these two stories.
Mm-hmm.
Carl and the Flying Fortress got together yesterday in Caldwell, New Jersey, as a result of the Fourth War Loan Campaign. You see, Carl did a wonderful job of selling war bonds during that drive. He'd been promised either a ride in Hell's Angels or a personal introduction to President Roosevelt if he sold $50,000 worth of bonds. Well, that was a pretty high goal for an 11-year-old youngster, but not for Carl, apparently. He not only sold that many, but quite a few more. In all, Carl sold almost $88,000 worth of bonds during the Fourth War Loan Drive. So he earned his reward without any trouble. Of course, he had to decide which honor he wanted most. But with the mechanical curiosity of most boys, Carl didn't take long in making the decision. He wanted a ride in that fortress. However, he first wrote a little note to Mr. Roosevelt explaining his decision. Then he was off to see the fortress. Oh, it must take a lot of money to run one of those things, Carl said as he wandered in and out of the fortress, inspecting all the gadgets and prying into everything. He fingered the machine guns and looked over the bomb bay doors and asked all sorts of questions. Then, his inspection over, Carl settled down for a ride high in the skies in this heroic veteran of battle. When he had landed, someone asked him, "How did this compare with the ride you had in the Jeep, Carl?" "Oh, boy," he said, "the bomber was a lot more fun. I sure would like to fly one someday." But until he's old enough to fly, Carl is satisfied with his status as honorary crew member of Hell's Angels and is determined to sell more war bonds than ever. And Americans can certainly be proud of all our boys and girls for all they're doing to help their country.
You're certainly very right, Byrne. At the same time, we are all aware of certain men who are doing their best not to help the war effort. I'm thinking of the men who try all sorts of things to keep out of the draft. But they never win, though, and sometimes their stories are almost funny. Take the case of one man who was recently picked up by the FBI in the East. He had registered under a false name, failed to return a questionnaire, failed to appear for a physical examination, neglected to report for induction, and carried no registration card. And still he wasn't successful. In fact, he says that all of his efforts to dodge the law gave him gray hair, stomach trouble, and nervous disorders.
Certainly a case of crime doesn't pay if I ever heard one. Down on Washington Street in Newark, New Jersey, there's a big brick building. It rises 22 stories into the sky. And each floor is filled with busy men and women, 9,000 of them, all employees of the War Department Office of Dependency Benefits, an activity of the Army Service Forces. And I want to tell you about them today because I think they are as important in keeping up morale here at home and on the fighting front as any other group of people in the country. For they are the paymasters, so to speak, for 11 million Americans. 11 million wives, children, parents, brothers and sisters of our soldiers. It's their job, the job of the ODB, as the organization is better known, to mail out those green soldier allowance and allotment checks every month. It's not only a big job, but it's a job that requires a human touch, for each case involves a soldier and his loved ones. Now, I think a look at the record will show that the ODB is succeeding, principally because of one man, Brigadier General H.N. Gilbert, USA, director of the organization. He has impressed upon his workers the fact that they are dealing with human beings, and they've learned that lesson well. There is the case of Susan. She is 22 and quietly unafraid as she prepares for motherhood, while her young soldier husband fights the Japs overseas. She knows that the green check from the ODB each month will provide her and her baby with the necessities of life. And there's Jack. He's just a boy of 12. His father and mother are dead, and he went to live with some friends when his older brother was drafted. Today, that soldier brother is happy in the knowledge that those green checks each month will give Jack the kind of a life a young boy should have. Or there's Helen. She's over 60 now. There was never a word of complaint when her son joined the army, even though she was left alone in the world. She never writes her boy about the growing pain in her side. But she knows that she'll be all right, for you see, those green checks will pay for an operation. And so it goes with one case after another. No wonder, friends, that the War Department Office of Dependency Benefits is called the heart of the Army. I think it's more than that. It's truly a cross-section of America at war. Now, Durward, what's the latest on the home front?
President Roosevelt is expected to issue another directive about the draft sometime today. It seems that many local draft boards, in order to fill their quotas, are canceling the deferments of many non-fathers who are war workers and are pushing them into the armed forces ahead of fathers. And the manufacturers fear that such a policy may cripple our war production. And President Roosevelt is expected to clarify the situation today by emphasizing that pre-Pearl Harbor fathers should get the same treatment as non-fathers.
And isn't this sort of an important day politically, Durward?
That's right, Byrne. Potential candidates for the Republican presidential nomination are getting their first test in New Hampshire today as that state elects delegates to the Republican and the Democratic national conventions. Now, Bernadine?
You know, friends, we hear a lot of talk about how food can fight for freedom. That means we all want to make the most of every scrap of food we have in the house. And Crisco is such a help at turning leftovers into appetizing meals. For instance, the other day I had some mashed potatoes left over, just enough for the children's lunch. So do you know what I did? I added a little celery salt to the potatoes. That gives them a wonderful flavor. And then I shaped them into patties and fried them in Crisco. Well, those potato cakes got so crisp and brown, not a bit greasy. And the youngsters love them. And you know something, friends? With Crisco fried foods, you don't have to worry a bit about upset digestions. Why, they set so light they don't bother even the children.
That's right. Crisco is pure and all vegetable, you know. And it's digestible itself. Just the finest quality shortening you can use. That's why we say with Crisco, everything you cook tastes better, and it's digestible. Now, Byrne, what's your last story?
In Granite City, Illinois, yesterday, 14 young men were waiting at the railroad station for a train to take them to Chicago, where they were to be inducted into the Navy. As their train approached, parents and relatives crowded around them on the platform and kissed them goodbye. But imagine their surprise when the train roared right on past without stopping. Well, a phone call was put into the Navy, and the 14 will try to join up again today. This time, they hope the train stops.
Well, friends, that's all for now. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of Crisco's Radio Newspaper.
Durward Kirby will bring you the latest world news.
Bernardine Flynn will give you the colorful human interest side of the news.
And we're both saying goodbye for Crisco.